Welcome to study of Bhagavad Gita. Each time that we come together, I begin by sharing some teachings from Yogacharya O'Brien that, based on Gita study that she shared with us a few years ago, and then I offer a short reflection, and then usually there's a little time left for dialogue. So let us begin with a short prayer. We open our hearts and our minds to the infinite indwelling Lord of Love. We give thanks for the way the radiance of the divine has and does shine to and through our lineage and our own divine self. We open ourselves to our innate knowing that the truth of our soul, the wisdom of our soul, be inwardly revealed in a way that can be practically applicable in our life today. May our time of study bring peace, may it bring clarity, and may it bring joy. Om, peace, peace, peace. In chapter 3, verses 15 and 16 of the Gita, Lord Krishna gives a powerful teaching about how to live consciously in this world in cooperation with divine order, and how our actions, when rightly aligned, can become a sacred offering. Chapter 3, verse 15. All action arises from Brahman, who is born of the imperishable. And Brahma is established in yajna, in sacrifice. Therefore, all-pervading Brahman is ever present in sacrifice. So, this verse shows the cosmic vision of life, a great wheel set in motion where everything from source, divine source, is meant to return to source through sacrifice, through conscious offering. In Kriya Yoga, we understand yajna not as ritual sacrifice, but as the inner disposition of self-offering, to live not for the ego, but for God, for spirit. Every action, when done without selfishness, becomes part of the sacred wheel of life. But what happens when this offering is forgotten? Chapter 3, verse 16 says, "Those who do not follow the wheel of life set in motion here, who live in sensuality and selfishness, live in vain." And of course, these verses are not saying that there's some thought of absolute perfection for us in these human bodies in this realm of duality. But it is giving us information and direction. When we forget our place in the cosmic order, when we act only for ourselves, when we disconnect from the sacred rhythm of giving and receiving, we suffer. The world suffers. Look around us. we can see this suffering. You don't have to look hard. There's climate imbalance, political division, there are wars, we have personal suffering, many of us, despair. And these are not only external events. They reflect a collective forgetting of the sacred. Okay, I need to let you know that I inadvertently began with my commentary this morning. So I will continue, then I'll share Uma's. So we look around us and, you know, we see this reflective, this collective forgetting of the sacred. Yet we are not powerless. Every spiritual practitioner is called to remember and to restore that balance. Paramahansa Yogananda in The Divine Romance reminds us, make your life a continuous series of little acts of devotion performed in the silent temple of your heart. Now, of course, each of us decides what devotion means for us. For some, it's flowers and poetry. You know, for others, it's an act of goodwill, a good thought. This is where the practice of Kriya Yoga becomes essential. In the stillness of meditation, we return to experiencing the center, our center, Brahman, the unchanging, through breath, through mantra, through devotion. We reattune, we could say, to this sacred wheel. We remember, I am not separate. My life is not my own. It is God's, ultimately. I am part of the whole. So, let me go to Uma's teachings, then I'll come back with this. You know how I always like to have 3 points of how do we do this in our life. So from the beginning, Umaji says, we continue today with our study of chapter 3 of the Gita, the chapter on karma yoga, the yoga of action. You'll see the similarities of this teaching here. We're guided, you know, we're on a guided journey through awakening of the soul's awareness, learning how to live consciously in this world, how to cooperate with the infinite, and how to be free from sorrow. This chapter begins with the timeless question posed by the devotee, which is better, meditation or action? If the goal is enlightenment, should I spend my time only in contemplation rather than outward action, which seems filled with distraction, effort, and inevitable sorrow? And Krishna's response begins by pointing out an essential truth, which we have heard in previous verses. And you know, it is not possible to avoid action. Right? In this realm, just breathing is an action. Thinking is an action. So, you know, simply maintaining this physical body requires constant activity. And, you know, not just any action, but interaction with the earth, the atmosphere, with other beings, the powers of nature, and the divine self. So the question shifts, not which is better, action or contemplation, but the question shifts. Rather, how can I act skillfully? How can I act skillfully? How can I engage in action without losing self-awareness? Capital S, God awareness. How can I engage in action? How can I engage with others or with the world without losing self-awareness or causing suffering for myself or others? And the Gita gives a profound answer. It says the key is sacrifice. The key is sacrifice, yajna. So when action is performed as an offering, free from selfish desire and egoic attachment, free from the illusion that I am the doer and I must control the results. When action is performed in this way, it becomes a doorway to freedom. So we're invited to live as an act of worship, in whatever way we define that, to offer all that we do to the divine and for the well-being of all. And the verses that we contemplated last week revealed this deeper understanding of sacrifice, not as a painful renunciation or some religious punishment, but as the key to joy and liberation. Sacrifice is the key to learning how to live and give without self-interest in the highest way. And the teachings in this chapter illuminate the selfless outpouring of divine grace, the continuous giving of the forces of nature, of the cosmos, of the unseen divine powers that support all of existence, that support life. And we are instructed, we are invited to emulate this divine offering by learning to give without expectation of reward. And then the very human question, yeah, but what about me? If I give, won't I be left depleted? And here's where the deeper purpose of all yoga, including karma yoga, comes in. Liberation of consciousness from the illusion of separateness is found when we act with non-attachment. It is this illusion of the separate self that causes fear, worry, you know, the belief that there's not enough. I'm not enough. That's why the teachings on sacrifice come after the revelation of the divine self, that we find in chapter 2 of the Gita. Selfless service arises from self, big self, knowledge. Selfless service arises from self-knowledge. It becomes a way of expressing divine love or participating in the infinite abundance of life, not withdrawing from it in fear. You know, when we act with selfish motive only to gain for ourselves, we create a resistance to the flow of grace. It reflects a lack of faith and trust. And when we open to being instruments, the divine flow moves through us and blesses us in return. You can think of Krishna's flute, a beautiful symbol of this truth. You know, the flute is empty, open, and receptive. And it rests on the lips of the Lord. It receives the breath of spirit, and beautiful music flows. It does not play itself. It allows itself to be played. At the center at CSE in the Krishna Chapel, we have a Murti, a statue of Krishna. And when it arrived from India, it arrived without a flute. And for many years, we searched for one. But for many years, none could be found that were appropriate for it in size and style. And yet, the perfect teaching. Where is Krishna's flute? And Uma would say, you are the flute. You are the instrument. Let divine grace, healing, blessing, and abundance flow through you. You are the flute. So let's return to the Gita text. Chapter 3, verse 13 says, those who eat food that was first offered as yajna, as divine offering, are not tainted by the reactions to harm caused in obtaining it. But those who prepare food only for their own pleasure, also consume its negative karma unknowingly. This verse points out a very powerful truth. Every bite of food, and we can think of food as anything that we take in. Every bite of food comes at a cost through the sacrifice of life forms, the labor of others, and the resources of the earth. To eat it without awareness is to take it in unconsciously. But when we pause and offer gratitude and remember the sacredness of the gift, that awareness purifies the act and aligns us with divine flow. We give back through our consciousness, our sharing, and our commitment to let our nourishment become service. There are many food prayers in various traditions, and a simple food prayer, any simple food prayer, thank you. Write your own. Any simple food prayer can restore this awareness. There's one that we use at the center that is from the Padma Purana. Om Anam Brahma Raso Vishnu Bhokta Devo Maheshwara Evam yang twa tuyom bhunkte anadosho na lipyate. It says, food is Brahma. The essence is Vishnu. The one who partakes is Maheshwara. Knowing this, one is not tainted by the impurity. So if there's any impurity that comes from the food, from any action, from its planting to its cooking, this prayer is said to support us to not be tainted by that. Any simple prayer will do. Shift in your consciousness. The food is God. It is the essence of God. The one eating the food is God. When this awareness is present, the food becomes a sacrament. This is a more simple translation for us. Verse 14 says, from food all beings come. From rain, food is produced. Rain arises from yajna, sacrifice, offering. And yajna sustains the balance of nature. Eknath Eswaran puts it this way. Living creatures are nourished by food. And food is nourished by rain. Rain is the water of life, which comes from selfless service. So this verse gives us an ecological teaching, doesn't it? Life depends on selfless giving, like the rain that falls on all. You know, think about it. If rain were removed from our ecological environment, would we have food? Would we have that sort of sustenance? When we, in this way, recognize our interdependence, we act to preserve the harmony of nature. You know, worship is not just ritual. It is conscious, respectful participation in the web of life. Gosh, wouldn't the world be different if everybody acted this way? So different. Verses 15 and 16 read, every selfless act is born from Brahman. You can translate from God. Every selfless act is born from God. All life turns on this law. Those who violate it, living only for the senses and ignoring the needs of others, waste their lives. Armstrong translates verse 16 this way. He writes, those who take from the earth but do not restore the balance, living only for sense pleasure, eventually cause harm to themselves and to the world. So this Gita, this is the Gita's teaching on sustainability, isn't it? Gosh, thousands of years ago, the material realm is upheld by spiritual principles. And when we break the rhythm of give and take, we suffer the consequences. Physically, ecologically, and spiritually. The Gita invites us to see that divine generosity is the ground of our being. Divine generosity is the ground of our being. Everything we need is already given. Life, breath, food, love, light. And the spiritual practice is to awaken to that truth, to that knowing, and to give in return. Not out of obligation, but out of joy, out of gratitude. When we, you know, give up the ledger, keeping score of what we've done and what we're owed. But I've given so much to life. It's time it gives back. When we give the ledger up, we enter into the overflowing abundance of divine grace. We open ourselves to that experience. As Yogacharya Umaji writes in her poem, Lark Singing Through the Night, once we become aware of the generous reality that is our life, we live in the overflow of divine love and joy. Once we become aware of the generous reality, capital R, that is our life, the reality that is our life, we consciously live in the overflow of divine love and joy. And this leads into next week's verse, chapter 3, verse 17, that Eknath Eswaran puts this way. He says, but those who realize the self are always satisfied. Those who realize God are always satisfied. Having found the source of joy and fulfillment, they no longer seek happiness in the external world. So let us contemplate these truths and live in the divine flow, recognizing the sacred reciprocity of life, and offering ourselves as the flute, as instruments of love and service. You are the flute. Let divine music play through you. So that concludes Uma's commentary on those verses, and then back to my words, you know, so how do we live this teaching now in a world that might feel chaotic, divided, or even violent? You know, of course, it might feel joyous, blessed, happy. And still, how do we live in this world? We don't have to look hard, you know, in the face of war and injustice. We don't have to look hard to see that in our world. In the face of that, we offer nonviolence and compassion in our thoughts, our speech, and our action. You know, in the face of a climate crisis, we live simply. We live simply, gratefully, and consciously, honoring the earth as a divine manifestation. In the face of political strife, we practice discernment. We speak our truth with love and compassion, and we resist being pulled into the hatred of divisiveness. And in the midst of personal challenge, we can return to the breath, to the practice, you know, to the altar of the heart, remembering that our very life is an offering. Sometimes this is not easy. But it is simple. Return to the breath. Let that be a bridge. That simple act can help us remember all of these. The teachings in the Gita are not abstract. It's a blueprint for conscious living. It invites us to ask each day, what am I offering? And to whom is it offered? Well, I may be offering something to you, but really, to whom is it offered? I do my dharma, you do your dharma, you live your right path for God, because that is yours to live through you. Am I acting harmony with in truth? Or am I acting from fear or habit or ego, trying to get something, trying to be noticed, trying to win? When you live with this awareness, even the smallest task can become an act of worship, of yajna, of, surrendered realization of the divine. Every action leads to freedom. And this sacred wheel of life turns with or without us. But when we live in alignment with it, when our life becomes a continuous offering to the divine, then even in a chaotic world, peace dawns within. And from that peace, the eternal light of our true self spreads. This is how we support in individual and planetary awakening. So let us take refuge in the silence of meditation that then supports us to act with awareness and love and walk gently in this world as instruments of balance and grace. And let us always remember the breath. Let the breath consciousness, conscious awareness of the breath, lead us to have our thoughts, our speech, our actions be an offering of the light of our soul into this world. Om. So we have a few minutes now for your reflections, questions, comments, and thank you for your patience in the back and forth, starting with my commentary and then going to Uma's and then concluding with mine. I think it worked out okay. All right. What's happening? What a joy to be reminded that our life can be an offering. I know most of you live that way, but we have to be reminded sometimes, especially when we're in the heat of the moment. Who is that? Dawn. Dawn and then Saraswati and Manohar. Are you able to unmute yourself, Dawn? Mukti, do we have the settings?
Good morning, nice to see you. It's a beautiful thunderstorm here, so it was very, very connected. I just want to thank you for today's teachings. This is something I've been struggling with for a while, which is one of the reasons why I left my job. And I probably need more therapy around this, but or more teachings. But it is really difficult when you believe you're being an instrument and you believe that you're giving of like letting yourself go, but then there's a balance where it becomes too much. And though you're not want like if it's for the actions for someone else and for a group of people and you don't see changes, it's really hard to continue sacrificing that or not expecting something to happen, right? Like, and I'm still trying to contemplate all this and trying to figure out kind of where the tipping point was, but just thank you. It's going to be a longer study, but
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Dawn. These teachings are not saying to become a doormat in personal relationships, work relationships, or in any situation. So, yes, we have to use our discernment that becomes clear through meditation. We have to use our discernment to see if we are in our right place or not. And sometimes things need to shift. Sometimes things need to shift, and it's just the way that life goes. So thank you for sharing that. These
thank you.
teachings do not say stay in a painful situation for all of eternity and make your life an offering. These teachings do not say that. Always, 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 we need to use our discernment about are we in our right place right now? And I know you did that deeply. Yeah. Thank you for reflecting on that for all of us. Hi, Saraswati Manohar.
Good morning. I just wanted to just briefly say how I think these teachings at this time are so relevant and important because there's so many people that are, including myself, saying, what is mine to do? And how can I contribute? And, we all have our own thing to contribute, so in our own way. And but as you said, even the smallest action can be, Brother Lawrence said, even picking up a little piece of straw in the yard was a prayer for me. So yeah, even the smallest action, and that's how all of us, I just have this vision of all of us coming together doing our little piece. Whatever it is, and we bring that strength to the world. So thank you.
Thank you, Saraswati. That's a beautiful quote from Brother Lawrence. Thank you for speaking it. And, we're all in different situations. Some of us have these, grand, activities in the world. We're working on political front or spiritual community or whatever job. We're educators. We're really touching people. All of that's wonderful. And some are retired and wondering, how am I going to make a difference? Yes, pick up the piece of straw as an offering. Pick up the whatever someone dropped in the walkway. Do it as an offering, not as a, oh gosh, I can't believe they littered. Do it as an offering. Principally, most importantly, let the light of your soul shine into in every interaction, regardless of how the other person is acting. But you don't have to stay there if you're being abused. Respectfully walk away. So thank you, Saraswati. I don't know where you moved on my screen. And nice to see you, Manohar, as well. Who do we have? Cynthia.
Hi.
Hi.
I belong to a group of Reiki practitioners, and we always say, when we're giving Reiki, we're receiving it.
Yeah.
It's a twofold participation. It's so lovely. And the more you give, the more you have, you know, as Shakespeare quoted. Well, it's interesting for me to draw the parallel between giving the light, receiving the light, in the fashion that our actions and thoughts are involved in this. It make and also being the doer and not being the doer. It makes me less judgmental when I know that I'm not the doer, but there's a puzzle in that as well, in that when the negative flow starts to happen, sometimes I joke with myself and say, I'm not doing this. These thoughts are not mine. And in a sense, with the ether being out there, all these thoughts that are bombarding against each other, and I see that negative thought and I go, that's not me. It's in the ether. I need to kind of recess from it, you know, and then I go on.
Yeah.
But I love the parallel of it's, this is the divine healer. We're not egotistical about this. The divine healer is the source. So yeah. If you could say something about the not being involved in being the doer when the negative flow comes in, I'd appreciate that.
Well, the flow of grace is always positive. Sometimes, for various reasons, our consciousness moves away from awareness of that. And then we can be impacted by the external environment, which is sometimes negative experience. And this, Cynthia, can be especially true for individuals who are, and this is not a good or bad thing, but opened to like global consciousness. And I would say many Reiki practitioner types have that going on. Not everyone, but it's more common. And some people don't have that to deal with, which can be lovely to have the focus be more in your realm. So that's something to be very aware of. And through the depth of meditation, consciousness is illumined and the mental field is purified, which supports our discernment. And so you are speaking to the truth that there is a witness consciousness saying, wait a minute, that's not me.
Yes.
That's coming from outside of me. I don't have to identify as that or with that. So what you want to identify with is that witness and celebrate that, wow, I have a witness who noticed that. You know, and then eventually, as you continue to practice, your mental field becomes more and more purified. And those thoughts, you have awareness of them without allowing them to come into your field.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and then you're not impacted by them in a reactive way. Yeah, you can respond to them. Hi, Sanjay. So nice to see you in your tree fort.
Good morning. Thank you for leading.
You're welcome.
I think the thing that like stood out to me that I was reminded by about like offering everything is, you know, just the reminder that one, God's within me and God's my very own awareness. So it's like offering everything isn't just offering the pretty stuff like the incense on the altar or like the meditation when it's going well or the service that like seems really, you know, productive, but it's offering like the distracted thoughts, it's offering the anger, it's offering the, you know, the fear, it's offering the potato chips when I feel like I'm being a bad yogi. It's like, no, like you get this too. Because when I'm bringing everything, I'm not like divided unto myself. Like, oh God, like I'm only here with God when things are going well. But over here, when I'm like not doing the spiritual thing, is we'll leave God out of this. And then it just divides me and there's more pain there. But when everything's there, I'm always with God, and it brings me closer and has more awareness around the things and brings in conscious choice.
So. Yeah, thank you for speaking that truth so eloquently and clearly, that everything is God and there's not a good and bad to it. Everything. And the clearer our mental field becomes, the better discernment we have. And by the way, I just want to add, there's nothing wrong with potato chips. Occasionally. Or it depends on the person, right? We each have our own path to live. But thank you for speaking that so clearly. Everything is of God. Everything. All of it. And as Uma teaches us, and our own self teaches us, it's too soon to tell. I love that mantra. You know, even with war, we don't like it, but it's too soon to tell. It's too soon to tell. And the war within us, it's too soon to tell what's going to come from it. Because it's all in the wheel of God. And the more purified our mental field becomes, the more we can discern what we want to align with. But it's not good and bad. So thank you, Sanjay, for sharing that so clearly. And yeah. Okay, anyone else before we conclude? Hi, Mukti Devi.
Thank you. For some reason, my hand raise is not available. I loved this teaching so much, and you've already, just by everything you've said, helped. But I've been struggling with language. When one is talking with a therapist and explaining about not acting, letting go of the ego, it triggers a therapist's worry that, you know, one isn't speaking one's truth, or there's a language barrier. And I found myself struggling in this conversation to share the truth of what I know from our spiritual teachings in a way that's compatible with the language of a therapist with a client. She's a good therapist. There's nothing contradictory about what is being offered there with the teachings, and yet the language barrier I'm having a lot of trouble with.
Yeah.
Can you say more?
Yeah, I can. And then Amrita, you can chime in if you'd like. I think, I don't know your therapist, but part of the commitment of someone in that role is to support us to not have what is called a spiritual bypass, which means that we are, in a way, making light of our humanness in such a way that we aren't really addressing it. And so I think you might address that with your therapist. You know, that these are the teachings I've been following for over 20 years or whatever that is for you. I think that's about it for you. And so this is the language that I'm accustomed to using. And in this case, in my therapeutic situation with you, I appreciate that you are consciously guiding me to not have a sort of spiritual bypass. You know, I think that those words will be meaningful. Amrita, I don't want to put you on the spot, but is that kind of on track? Can you unmute yourself?
I have to. There, now she can.
She's not unmuted. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, everyone. What just came into my mind was talking to people, and certainly in that situation, just about this is the context of my life. This is not just, you know, verbiage that I'm using, but this is the context of my life, and this is how I hold myself, and kind of educating in that way, in just that simple sentence, not trying to explain everything, but this is such a huge part of how I hold myself, and I hold life, that I can come to you with this, you know. And I find that just in my life, explaining that this is it. I can't step out of this and use, I mean, I can try to use maybe a verbiage that works. Just got to know that this is who I am, from my soul to everything that I do in my life.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. This is the context of my life. So set it up with her that way. I think you said it's a woman. Maybe you didn't.
Yes.
So set it up with that person that way. This is my context. It's not just something I read or am learning right now. This is the context. This is it. The way I live and have lived for more than 20 years.
But both of what you said is very helpful, because otherwise I find myself creating some kind of fictional separation between what I would bring into that session, and that's not useful. That makes the session not useful at all. So
yeah. What a great question. Thank you, Mukti Devi. I'm sure you're not alone.
No, thank you.
In that, and we can apply that to all different kinds of situations. And Amrita, thank you for sharing your insights and wisdom about that from your own experience. Appreciate you. Okay, anyone else before we conclude? Anyone want to share their wisdom on this topic, their insights? All right. Okay, I look forward to being with you again next week. Matthew has updated the Gita study schedule for you. I made some changes to it so that I can be with you more often. My plan is to be with you every Thursday, except when I'm in Italy. I would if I could, but I can't. And because of other responsibilities. So that, I think that's two or three Thursdays I'll miss on that. And then, of course, Thanksgiving and Christmas. We'll take a break from this. But otherwise, we get to be together every Thursday. This is fantastic. Wonderful. I always love seeing you, hearing from you, and appreciate your presence tremendously. So let's go forward, always mindful of our breath. When in doubt, take a conscious breath. And then let that remind us to have our thoughts, our words, and our actions represent the light of our soul, without self-judgment or judgment of others. Just being. Om. Have a beautiful day, and I look forward to being with you next time. Bye now.
Amrita, thank you.